From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
You know, it's very interesting when you're growing a business because at different times in the growth of the business, you meet people with different skill sets. And also, of course, people have different ambitions and you've got to respect those ambitions.
I'm Conor Carney, and that's the voice of Anne Herity, CEO of CPL Resources PLC. CPL is a global talent company that Anne started in 1989 as a specialist recruiter in the technology sector. Anne took the company public 10 years later and has since grown the business to 570 million euros in annual revenues. In this conversation, Anne talks about starting a business in a recession, the positives and negatives of focusing on a niche, and the importance of making the customer of your business as successful as they can be. We also talk about the recent sale of the company to their Japanese partner for 318 million euro. I started off by asking Anne to tell me the story of how she founded CPL.
I started the business at the end of 1989 as a specialist technology recruitment company. Now, that was an interesting time to start a business because obviously we were in just going into recession here in Ireland. And the first couple of years were extremely difficult and very challenging. Unemployment was high. It was, you know, running at almost 15, 16%. And I felt that the right thing to do in order to really be able to serve customers better was to specialize and develop very deep relationships within the tech sector.
At that time, do you think that might have been a benefit starting a business in a recession?
Yes, I think you learn a lot starting a business in a recession because you've got to bootstrap, work really hard. No, certainly for us in CPL, we measured our success in terms of the customers who called us back and recommended us to others, rather than actually really focusing on generating our revenue and fee income, which was very, very strong focus on the customers. So I think you learn a lot setting up business in recession. And the good thing then is that once the market started to open up, we were ready. We had good, efficient processes in place. We were focused and we had good, strong relationships with both the candidates who were looking for jobs and the companies who were looking to hire people.
How did you come across that insight?
Well, I was always interested in the tech sector. I was working in a recruitment company and at that stage, you know, we were recruiting for many different types of skills. And I was quite frustrated about that because I felt I wasn't building a deep enough knowledge in any one particular sector. And I really understood, you know, when it comes to somebody's career and the impact that an individual can make in terms of the growth of a business, I really understood that very well from an early stage. So I wanted to have a deep knowledge of the sector and of the opportunities in which I would operate. Tech was my favorite sector because it was something that I was interested in. So it was a little bit probably more good luck that I had that bias than any great insight in terms of knowing that the tech sector was going to really take off.
Is that one of the reasons why you started the business out of a frustration from working across multiple sectors and just wanting to bring a more focused approach to it?
I was passionate about delivering for our customers. And as I say, we have two customers, both the company and the person who's looking to change jobs. It was both that commitment to do something and that desire to do something a little bit different in the industry. And at that stage, people didn't specialize. And, you know, remember back then, tech was a very tiny niche. I mean, I could tell you almost every job right across Ireland that was available in tech in 1990. At the software development end of things, it was a tiny industry.
Do you think it was a benefit having a niche in general and just focusing on the tech sector at that point?
Yes, I think it is good to have a focus and to be specialists for sure. But you've got to make sure equally, as we expanded the business and as the business grew, we were then reliant on one particular sector. So in terms of our risk management, and particularly after the dot-com, the Y2K and the dot-com collapse, that was when we decided that we needed a different strategy and that we should specialize in a number of sectors and not be over-reliant on any one. Nevertheless, we still committed that we would stay niche within each sector. So we would only have specialists working in each sector. So while at a group level, we covered a number of sectors, we had specialist businesses in each sector.
I'd read that you took a small investment in order to start the business. I suppose these days, a recruitment business wouldn't have huge overheads or startup costs. Was it necessary back then to take on an investment in order to start the way you wanted to start?
Well, what happened was the husband of a friend of mine agreed to back me. I didn't have the finance or the wherewithal to get the business started and couldn't have done so without that support. Now, I know there is a view that it doesn't take a lot of capital to set up a recruitment business, but actually, in today's world, that's not necessarily true, because we're operating now in a global labor market. And, you know, that was the case even before the pandemic brought it front and center in everybody's mind. So you need to have strong people, good technology, broad reach in order to be able to really serve your clients well. And a lot of the searches we do, people are looking for a specific type of talent. And the concern is that they get the right skill set, not where in the world they're located.
At that stage, you had started a business, you'd taken on a small investment and everything else. Did you have goals for the business? Because obviously it took off like a rocket in one sense, and you eventually, you know, in a pretty short amount of time became a public company. How did you foresee things might end up for you in the first year just after starting the business?
Well, we were 10 years before we became a public company. So in today's world, that's probably a long time. But back then, I suppose it did seem to be fairly short. But in terms of what kind of goals did we have when starting the business? You know, CPL is very much a people business and we're very purpose driven. And really, you know, our focus is very much when you're dealing with people and dealing with their careers, you know, to me, your career and your work life is right up there with your health and happiness. Abiding theme or recurring theme was really about supporting people and enabling people to reach their full potential. And also, as we evolved, we became very focused and understood very well the transformational impact that matching the right person to the right role can have in an organization. And that's really how we started to evolve our services from originally when we started out pure permanent recruitment into much broader workforce models and workforce solutions.
Is it as simple as focusing on the customer and doing the right thing as you saw it and really focusing on the people?
It sounds so simple when you say it, to focus on the customer and to focus on the people. But, you know, the reality of it is, that is the secret sauce. That is the magic. Being an ethical organization who really commit to doing the right thing. One of our very good customers said to us one day that the difference they felt in dealing with CPL was that, you know, if something goes wrong or something happens, we go into solution mode. We don't go and pull out the contract and say, it's line 32 here and it's your fault or my fault. We just go into solution mode. And so we'd be very strong in terms of our focus on our own people and developing them and supporting them, but also similarly for our clients and, you know, working with them. Particularly now, it's so interesting in terms of the whole evolving workplace.
I wanted to ask you about, if you can remember, what the key challenges were in that first 10-year period, you know, from when you kind of started the business and to when you went public. Can you remember the bits that you struggled with or that were just the challenge to the business in general?
What I would highlight there in terms of challenges is making sure I hired the right people for my own team and put the right team in place with complementary skills and, of course, winning business. It was a very competitive landscape. In Ireland, there are about 600, I think, recruitment licenses, maybe a little bit more. And, you know, at that stage, there was probably 1.5 million people at work. There's maybe 2.4 million people at work. So it's a very competitive environment. And, you know, we really had to be on our best game to win.
What did you do, if you can remember, and how is it different to today in order to win business in the recruitment industry?
You know, in some ways, there's a lot of change. And in other ways, there's very little change. You know, I really believe it comes down to relationships and in terms of how you build those relationships with your customers, how you build that trust that they know they can rely on you to deliver. And that's one of the things in CPL we'd be very focused on, is that commitment to deliver and to deliver well for our customers. And, you know, of course, there are different enablers now. You know, so we have technology, we have social media, we have different ways of creating our brand and building our brand and getting our story out. But, you know, fundamentally, it comes down to the relationships you build, to the knowledge that you have, to your expertise within the sector. Just having the right focus, really.
You mentioned there as well that it was challenging in some respects trying to find the right team members with complementary skill sets. Was that something you really had to learn, or did you make any mistakes when you first started out?
Well, you know, I did, of course, make mistakes. And, you know, it's very interesting when you're growing a business, because at different times in the growth of the business, you meet people with different skill sets. And also, of course, people have different ambitions, and you've got to respect those ambitions. So not everybody who starts out with you makes the full journey with you. But I must say, for me, I'm very pleased that there's a core element of the team who started out with me, who have made the full journey with me, and who are continuing to expand and grow our business. That, and they have been supported by, you know, some great people that have joined over the years at different times. So I really think it's fundamental to the growth, certainly of a business like ours, how you structure the team, how you bring people into the business. And I would always say to people, go for better and more experienced people than you think you can afford, or more skilled rather than more experienced people than you think you can afford.
And is that something that you stuck to internally as well as when you're advising clients?
Absolutely. I just think that was a critical, you know, it is really about the people. It is about the attitude of the people, about their will to win, people on your team. So definitely, I think I put that first.
The point you mentioned about different people having different ambitions, is that a key part of finding out before someone joins the team what they want out of their career and their life, I suppose, and whether CPL will be able to deliver that for them?
Yes, I think, you know, recruitment is a two-way street. So we're looking to see what an individual has to offer to us as a company, to understand, is the culture fit right? Do they have broadly similar values to what we have as an organization? And, you know, they're representing us to our customer base. So that's very important for us, that our values are aligned. And equally for the individual, they've got to look and say, will I be better for having joined this organization? Will I learn, you know, will I learn more here? Can I trust that you'll deliver on the things you say you'll do for me? And, you know, over the years, I've seen people who are genuinely serious about their careers and ambitious about their careers are people who really want to learn. And that becomes a fundamental part of the type of role they take.
Have you find it a challenge to encourage staff, to keep staff motivated? Or do you find that when you hire someone, they just tend to be naturally quite motivated? How do you keep people happy and in their jobs for such a long time?
We work very hard at the whole engagement piece. And I think communication is key. Understanding where the individual is in terms of their life and their career and what their motivations are, is very important towards keeping somebody engaged. And I think it's a constant. This is not something that you do annually now at your year-end appraisal. This is a constant communication throughout the year, acknowledging good work when it's done. Now, having said all that, I think there's then a fine line between that and actually empowering people to get on with their job. And I believe very strongly in empowering people. If you hire the right person in the first instance, it makes managing them very easy. So I think the time is well spent if you put that in upfront into the recruitment process.
Have you found any recruitment processes to be better than others? I mean, do you believe in psychometric testing? Do you believe in interviews with multiple people? You know, what do you think is a robust interview process for a business like CPL or indeed any other business who you might deal with?
It's really about having a robust process. And I think, first of all, that the line manager should be the person who does the interviews. Yes, maybe alongside HR or whatever, but the person who understands most deeply what the role is and what success looks like in the role. I think that piece up front I find very important to really mark out and understand what you're looking to achieve with the role. Having completed that, I absolutely do believe in psychometric assessment. I think they can be very helpful as part of the interview process. I think they can point an interviewer in the right direction in terms of areas to explore with a candidate. I don't see interviews as a way of kind of, you know, catching people out. I see interviews very much as an exploration, because it needs to be right for the individual as well as right for the company. So I think that, you know, having that open, transparent discussion at interview and using something like a good psychometric assessment to lead some of the conversation can be very helpful.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
I'd like to pull it back a little bit now and just talk a bit more about how you got involved in the recruitment industry. What had you done before starting CPL and how did you get there?
So I went to UCD and I did a degree in maths and economics. And I left college in 1984. It was a terrible time in Ireland at that time. It was very bleak, very difficult to find jobs. I toyed with the idea of doing law for a while and then decided not to do that. You know, I worked in various jobs and restaurants and different things until 1986. So 2 years later, I finally got a permanent job with Xerox in telesales. And that was my first real experience of corporate life. It was great experience and really stood to me very well. Great sales training. And I really enjoyed the experience there. And I moved from Xerox. Then I did a couple of moves and I was working with Woodchester, or a company that they owned at the time called Savings and Investments. And I had registered with an employment agency to change jobs. And the person interviewing me suggested that I should apply for a job that they had. They were offering training and recruitment. And that was in 1988.
Do you remember being an ambitious student or having an idea that you wanted to go into business or that you wanted to start your own business earlier in your career, or even when you were at college in UCD?
I was anything but an ambitious student. I really didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. And I also, you know, didn't worry too much about that either. I always felt I'd be able to manage or get through. But so no, I wasn't at all ambitious. And you know, I think it's interesting because, as you can imagine, in my role, you know, people are always saying how important it is to find your passion and to work at something that you're absolutely passionate about. And while I agree, of course, that it is fantastic for that to happen, at the same time, you know, not everybody finds their passion early on. You know, some people, yes, are focused from the time they're very young. I want to be a doctor or a teacher or whatever it is. Other people, it takes a lot longer. And I always say to people now, and I'm coaching them, not to worry about that whole concept of finding your passion. You should explore different roles. If you're not sure, what it is. You should explore different roles. And the opportunity is there now, where there's much more flexibility around the workforce. And you can work temporary assignments. You can work interim assignments for a while and try and understand what gives you energy. What do you enjoy? What angle would you like to take in terms of your future career? Because I know certainly for me, I was fortunate that I fell into recruitment by accident, and it combined obviously the sales training that I had, you know, just a natural empathy that I have with people and a desire to see people succeed. And I suppose that's one of the things that really drives me, is I love seeing people succeed.
You're very focused on other people and your customers and everything. And not having held huge ambitions to kind of grow the size of business that CPL eventually became, did you ever have time to kind of sit back and reflect or think about this business is a success and it's going quite well?
You know, I get a lot of joy out, you know, our business is a business that there's a lot of ups and downs in. You know, you see people getting job offers and you see them very excited about it. And, you know, it's lovely to be with them at that moment in their lives when they're really excited about what they're doing. But, you know, equally, we see people getting disappointed as well. And, you know, that's just the nature of careers and the nature of work, where you're, you know, for the duration of a career. So they're the things I kind of get excited about. And I'm more interested in the job that I'm doing and doing the job well than I am standing back saying, oh gosh, is that, you know, I really believe that success and failure are two sides of the same coin. Failure sets the next challenge, but so also does success. So they're both just experiences. And I think very much about that. It's an experience and it's a great experience. But, you know, it's about the moments along the way.
Having started in a recession, and you said there that it's a business with a lot of ups and downs, how have you managed through the various other recessions where unemployment is increasing and the business might not be able to perform as well as before, given the sector that it's in? How have you managed those periods over the years?
It's really been about the team. You know, it's about working with really good people, and it's about working with really good customers. I have to say that particularly we've had very tough times, like when we came out of that whole dot-com recession. We were a specialist tech recruiter. We were a public company. It was very tough. You know, every mistake you make is in the public eye. I must say, we just as a team, we pulled together and we dug deep and set out a strategy and, you know, went with it. Similarly, again, in 07 and 08, kind of things that were thrown at us as a recruitment company. I'm sure many thought we'd struggle to survive. But again, you know, it's the team, the people with that will and attitude to succeed, and just how we work together and how we pull together that makes a difference.
Did you find in those times that you need to, as a leader, be motivating the team a little bit more? Or were you pleasantly surprised by the people around you that were able to take the reins and maybe bring you forward a little bit?
I have to say that the team were great, really good now, you know, understood their responsibilities and understood the responsibilities to their own team members. You know, I would really attribute a lot of the success to the team. I think it's very important, though, as a leader, that you've built trust with the team, that they know they can trust you. They know that you'll deliver on what you're saying you'll do. I also think it's very important to stay positive, stay motivated as a leader, and really to look, make sure you have, you know the direction.
Over the years, I'm sure you've obviously worked extremely hard, and there's been ups and downs, as you said. Have you had to manage, I suppose, your own personal health and fitness at any stage over time, and just to make sure that you're taking time out to be able to relax and blow off steam as such, and to be able to be in a position to be positive and motivated for your team in those moments?
I'm blessed to have high energy. You know, I have very, very good energy. I could do a lot more in terms of the fitness side of things. But, you know, the reality of it is I had two young kids for most of that time. Now, I was lucky, fortunate that my husband, Paul, worked in the business with me. So, you know, we were able to manage some of that together. But, you know, when you're growing a business, it's all consuming. And, you know, for me, it was work and family, work and family. And it's interesting. I'm gradually now, as the children are older, I'm starting to do different things. Like I've taken up golf during COVID and things like that, that I wouldn't have had time for before.
How did you decide to go public? Was it a necessity or was it something that came about and it became a goal for the business? And then in a few years' time, you achieved it.
It was a timing thing, really. You know, we were coming towards the end of the 90s. Technology was the place to be. The whole internet, you know, was really just starting to take off. There was a massive boom in terms of companies going public and share prices and so forth. So from that point of view, it was a timing piece, and we wanted to raise some money to do acquisitions. But also I was acutely aware, and I've spoken a lot about the team on this with you, I was acutely aware that I had people who had been with me in the business from the start. And I also, it was also a way of enabling them to participate in the business through long-term incentive plans and share option schemes and things like that, which was the trend at that time.
Do you read business books, and can you remember any books over time that have had an impact on you and the way you thought about the business?
I do. I read a lot of business books. I'd be very much self-educated, really. I really like Jim Collins' Good to Great. You know, he describes this, get the right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus. And if you have the right people on the bus, it's not so much a worry about the direction that the bus is going in, because if you need to change direction and you have the right people with you, you'll be fine.
Have you had mentors as well as books, and maybe not in a formal setting, but has there been anyone that you turned to over the years and who you've looked to help you out with the business or with anything else in your life at that time?
I don't have any specific mentors. What I would have is a really good network of business people, and particularly through the EY Entrepreneur of the Year network, for example. And that alumni network is very powerful, because there's always somebody there who's faced a challenge that's broadly similar to something you're facing at the time. And it's a very supportive network. For me, it's just about listening, picking up pieces of advice, reflecting on it, moving forward.
Has that been the best part of being part of that network in general?
It has. That's a huge part of the network. It really is. It's about learning from others, seeing what they've done, looking at how they've built their businesses, how they've achieved.
Why did you decide to sell the business recently?
So we had been on a growth trajectory in terms of expanding the business globally. Building out a partnership with outsourcing now enables us to do that much quicker. So if you think about it now, from our point of view, from the point of view of our customers, you know, we can hire quickly and compliantly for them all over the world. At the moment, OSI have a base in over 100 countries. And, you know, we've been working closely already with some of those businesses. And that's very exciting. So, for example, we've been working with their business in Brazil, with their business in Indonesia, and with their business in India, particularly around finding tech talent.
Those kind of synergies have obviously been key to the partnership in general.
They're a very important part of it. Very important part. I said to you at the outset that the labour market now is global. It's about where you can find the right talent and the right skills. And I think, you know, we're seeing that talent crunch come back again, which is, it's hard to understand given the fact that we're just coming through a global pandemic. But definitely attitudes are changing and people's desires are changing in terms of how and where and when they want to work.
Do you think there has been a big change in how the world works due to the pandemic? And do you think it'll be a lasting change?
I do think there will be lasting changes, for sure. I think a lot will depend, of course, on how economies recover and the kind of economic growth that's here. But I think technology is driving change and has enabled quite a lot of change already. And I don't really see that slowing down. Now, I do still think people will come back into the workplace. We will most likely certainly operate a hybrid model for a number of years, I would think, because you need people back in the workplace for things like building the culture, training in particular, very important. Now, who knows how that will change if you look out further than 10 or 15 years. But I think in our circumstances today, we definitely will have a mix of office and work from home.
Sure. I think I've heard from a lot of corporates and everything else that kind of hybrid model of getting people in and, you know, to support the culture and to support training and everything like that is important, but perhaps giving people a little bit more leeway to work a couple of days from home if they wish or if it makes sense for them personally.
What we're hearing from people is that they just find it, you know, in the roles that suit working from home, they find it very impactful.
So, Anne, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. If I could ask you just about your goals, I suppose, and your plans for the future personally, and how CPL might fit into that.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the continued success of CPL as part of the OSI group. We have a super team in the business, and I know that they're already starting to integrate very well with OSI. And I suppose I'm really excited about that opportunity, particularly around global growth for us as a business and being able to serve our clients across that global stage. And that's really my focus at the moment.
Anne, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
Very welcome, Conor. Lovely to talk to you.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Conor Carney. Thanks for listening.